This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Future Proof with Jonathan McCray on News Talk.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland.
Yes, welcome back to Future Proof on News Talk. I'm Jonathan McCray. If you'd like to get in touch with the programme, you can email us science@newstalk.com. We get to all of those at the end of the podcast. You can download that in the Go Light app. Now, when the Northern Lights have shown up over Ireland, that wasn't a once-off cosmic fluke. We are at solar maximum, the most active phase of the sun cycle, and what's happening up there can have very real consequences on what we do down here. To explain is Dr. Alexandra Ruth Fogg. She's a postdoctoral fellow in astronomy and astrophysics at the Dublin Institute for Advanced Studies. Welcome to the programme, Alexandra. So, for those who haven't heard yet, maybe you might explain what exactly these things are, these northern lights that we talk about. What exactly is happening?
Yeah, hi, Jonathan. So it's one of the most obvious space weather effects that humans have seen for thousands of years. So what's happening are large eruptive events, we call them, coming out of the sun. So the sun's atmosphere is streaming out all the time. And occasionally a really big blob comes out, travels through the solar system and hits the Earth. So it then sort of the Earth's magnetic field gets that punch in the face. Everything kind of wobbles. And then what we see are particles that energetic particles. So if you remember from school, electrons and ions, they run down the Earth's magnetic field lines and crash into the Earth's atmosphere, which gives over tons of energy to the Earth's atmosphere, which it then shines out as light in the sky. And that's how we see these mostly green and a little bit of pink and red displays in the sky.
Yeah, the analogy of the umbrella is a really good one, actually.
Yes, yeah. So we have, so if you imagine, I it's a shame you can't see me, but I'm holding up an umbrella and pointing it at you. And then you throw a water balloon at me. That water balloon is what we call the coronal mass ejection, the blob that comes from the sun. So the water balloon hits the umbrella and the umbrella wobbles, but I don't get wet. So that kind of that dispels a sort of myth that people have in the field that it's the sun's particles crashing into the Earth's atmosphere. In fact, the umbrella, the Earth's magnetic field, protects us from the particles, but it wobbles the Earth's magnetic field and then particles near the Earth that sort of belong to the Earth, if you will. Will come down into the atmosphere from all that wobbling and jiggling and crash into the atmosphere and cause the aurora.
What? I didn't know that.
Yeah. So
I thought it was so it's not particles from the sun that we're seeing when the northern.
Yeah. So that's kind of a myth that I was talked out of me very early on in my career. that people generally think that there are very rare occasions where we have a direct connection between the sun and the Earth. So if you imagine the particles are sort of running down a motorway. Very rare, and the motorway being the magnetic field, there are very rare occasions where the Earth's magnetic field joins with the sun's magnetic field, and then we get particles from the sun that generate the aurora. But they will be at very high latitude. That wouldn't be what we're seeing in Ireland.
Right.
So the vast majority of the aurora is caused by particles trapped around the Earth.
And because like the wobble is kind of like shaking off a dusty coat or something and those particles fall down or something?
No, it's a much more dramatic than that. So it's quite explosive.
Okay.
Loads of energy goes into the Earth system and then it kind of propels, if you can imagine, a slingshot. So we sort of slingshot the particles down the magnetic field lines. They've got tons of energy and they crash one-on-one with the particles in our atmosphere. So people often would say the Earth's atmosphere is mostly oxygen and nitrogen. We learned that at school. That's still true. And we're crashing one-on-one with all those atmospheric particles, giving them loads of energy. They can't keep it in. They've nothing to do with it. So they shine it out as light. And that gives us the aurora.
Wow. Well, I'm going to have to re-record my documentary from 10 years ago.
Yeah, well, I can tell you about it.
Yeah. Let's talk about the colours then. Why do we see different colours?
So the different colours is there's kind of two different things happening there. So number one, it's all the different particles in the atmosphere. They have different structure, which means they can produce different colours, different types of light. And it's also about the particles coming in, the energy they have. So it's the interaction of those two things. We need kind of precise amounts of energy to make precise colours. So most of the time, what we'll see is green. We can also see pinks and reds. That's a bit more rare, and even more rarely we get sort of a purpley kind of colour. And I think some people did see those in 2024. It was a really amazing event. It's the first time I saw the aurora in real life. I was out on Hoth. What you also see, if you're in space and you have a special kind of camera, you can see in UV and infrared. So UV is your invisible ink pen that you might have played with once, and then infrared would be the night vision goggles.
Right. Okay. So you talked about 2024. 2024 was the year where everyone saw it. I think most people in Ireland saw it for the first time and they were like, what the hell?
Yeah.
So what does solar maximum mean, and why did we suddenly start seeing the Northern Lights in 2024?
Yeah, so there's actually a bunch of factors why 2024 was such an exciting year. So the solar cycle is an 11-year cycle. So once every 11 years, we have more activity, more blobs, more water balloons coming out the sun and hitting into the Earth.
Why?
Just because the sun's going through this cycle, it's a changing happening of the sun's magnetic field. And sometimes it's more active and sometimes it's not.
But why 11 years?
I'm not sure about that. I think that's probably a solar physics question. I'm a very much an earth physics person, but it is a very well-known phenomenon.
Okay.
So we can track that back hundreds and hundreds of years. There are astronomers in other parts of the world, particularly in Asia, that were recording what the sun was doing by looking up at the sun with their eyes, which I wouldn't recommend anybody does, just to be clear. For hundreds of years, we can show this 11-year cycle. It's very, very stable. But what made 2024 so exciting is the previous peak was kind of quiet and not as interesting. We don't know exactly why. And then the one before that was the early 2000s. That was very dramatic. But what's happened since the early 2000s is a lot of social media.
Right.
So everybody, you know, whereas perhaps in the early 2000s, you
MySpace.
Might have watched, yeah, you watched the news and then you went to bed and nobody texted you to say the aurora is happening. Now, in 2024, everybody was seeing on Instagram and TikTok and everything and texts coming in, and they went out and they had their smartphones to take a picture. So I think a lot of people will have seen it more because of that social media era.
Mm. Well, when we took photographs with our phones and they were so much better than what we could see with our naked eye, why was that?
So that's a very complicated thing of how the phone is editing the picture that comes in. If
right.
you think you take a picture of your face, it never looks quite exactly the same. And the
it probably lets in more light as well.
Yeah.
Aperture thing.
And it's often if you have a very long exposure time, then you're going to see, it's like when you take a picture of a waterfall and it goes fuzzy, that long exposure time. But the same with the Northern Lights. We're taking in more light, adding it all together to get that spectacular image versus what you're seeing with your eyes.
Right.
It's never quite the same.
So why are you studying this? You brought out a paper looking at the two big events in 2024 that gave us these Northern Lights. Why is that of interest to Irish researchers, and why, you know, what made you go, this is something I want to study?
So it's really important to understand what space weather is as a hazard. It's also scientific interest. You know, everybody went out and saw those storms. Mm. People want to know what that was. Space weather is a natural hazard. So it's a natural hazard globally. The whole Earth is feeling it. But the effects are very localized. So it depends on your geology, your infrastructure grids, all these kind of things. So
from a technological point of view, it can mess with the satellite stuff. It can mess with them.
Yeah.
It can frizz out electrical circuits, or not necessarily?
Yeah, so it could, in theory, a very rare, very dramatic event could blow out power lines and things like that. In those storms, we're more prepared for it now. But we did see things like a farmer in America, his fancy GPS tractor was just going around in circles during the storm because the GPS wasn't working anymore.
Yeah.
Because the Earth's magnetic field was changing and experiencing all these changes. But it's important that we prepare as a society and understand the risks globally, but also locally. What does the Earth's magnetic field and currents look like over Ireland specifically? So we know what's coming.
Right. Does climate change have any effect on either our ability to see Northern Lights or Does it mitigate the damage that we might see from solar activity hitting satellites and so on?
So the climate change is kind of happening down here in the atmosphere, where we're seeing the rain, the awful rain we've had this week, and where we see clouds and things like that. Space weather is much higher up. So space weather is the sort of bottom layer of what we would consider space weather. The ionosphere is around 90, 100 kilometers. So we generally consider them to be quite separate.
Right.
And they're not really mixing in together very much. Now, I have seen a few papers where they've shown that, you know, the changing in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is having a change on the heights. But it's so very minor that if a solar storm comes and hits the Earth, it's not going to make a difference. That's such an overwhelming phenomenon to the Earth's magnetic field.
So I've been talking about solar storms for quite some time in the program. I'm wondering, have we not figured that out in terms of, you're saying, you know, we've started to mitigate those problems, like with Elon Musk throwing his Starlinks into space? You know, he's not going to do that if he thinks a single, you know, eruption on the surface of the sun is going to wipe out half his satellites. So presumably it's not as much of a danger to our electronics and our GPS as it used to be.
So, yeah, I would say so. The better we understand it, the better we can mitigate the risk. So actually, with the example of Starlink a few years ago, they had their model that they had, I think, slightly mismodeled the storm that was coming. They went ahead with a launch anyway, and they lost most of the payload.
Oh, wow.
It was lost in the storm and fell back into the atmosphere. And that's, you know, one of the biggest companies in, you know, that's doing this kind of thing. So
it's still very much a risk if it's not calculated correctly.
So even if you have like the best possible models, we don't know exactly what's going to happen. We need more research to understand that. If you take the comparison to the field of weather, they have, you know, a century probably more data. They have more weather stations all over the place. So they're, you know, we need that level of data to get the level of prediction that they have.
So the two events that happened in 2024 were quite different, weren't they? Even though they seemed the same to people running outside giddily in the evening. That's what your paper showed. There were two slightly different types of impacts?
Yeah, that's correct. So this was one of the key points we have from the study. So while we saw kind of similar aurora on the ground, the driving events, the blob coming out of the sun, was quite different. So in May 2024, we had several events come out of the sun. They mingled as they went through the solar system, became more complex and bigger. But in October, it was much smaller. But what the difference was there, that we still got these dramatic northern lights on the ground, is that something had happened beforehand that had already energized the system. So, you know, if you've already had one leucozade, a second leucozade is going to give you more energy, you know, kind of thing. So that meant that we still got fairly similar effects on the ground, even though the driving event in May was much more dramatic.
I love this phrase, the sun to mud study. And this is the idea that it's like farm to fork, sun to mud. Is that the idea? That it's from the very beginning of where the sun to its effects right on the ground.
Yeah. So it's quite a range of different data sets we put into the paper. So oftentimes in the field, or certainly historically, people are looking either at the Earth or they're looking at the sun. So what we wanted to do, and this is something that's really great about where I work at the Dublin Institute for Advanced Studies, is make the best of both our research groups. So we have solar experts, we have Earth experts, and people who study everything in between, bring that all together and try and trace from beginning to end the effects of the events.
Do we know when the next aurora is likely to be?
Off the top of my head, no. There are different aurora alert systems you can use. So we can't really look ahead and say, you know, in a month's time, we're definitely going to have aurora. We just don't know that. What we can do is look at what's happening on the sun and say, okay, we think something might be coming in the next day or two.
Right.
So
if activity starts to get a little bit more active?
Yeah. So it's again,
incipit activity increase. My brain is not working today. So if you see an increase in bubbling on the surface of the sun, you think it might be about to blow. Is that the idea?
Yeah. So it's certainly, if we see something coming off the sun, we can track and see, is it going to hit the Earth? And then we can see. But there's also, again, those astronomers for hundreds of years have been looking at sunspots, which are dark spots on the surface of the sun. And they can are very related to the phenomenon that comes out and hits the Earth. So there's those kind of very simple things. But obviously, with our hundreds of years of research we've had since then, we can try and give more accurate timings and strength of the storm that's going to come.
Right. And I guess after, given that geologically 11 years or 100 years or 1,000 years is a blip in the lifetime of the sun, we're not going to see any changes over the next while. That circle's going to continue.
No.
Finally, did you get into space weather because of your surname?
Yes, good one. So my mother's name is actually Gail as well, so that's quite fun.
so not
no, really. That's a coincidence, but okay. Yeah.
Well, it's been lovely having you on. Alexandra Ruth Fogg is a postdoctoral fellow in astronomy and astrophysics at the School of Cosmic Physics in Dias. Thanks so much for your time, Alexandra.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Future Proof with Jonathan McCrae. Proudly supported by Research Ireland. Sunday from midday. News Talk. Conversation that counts.